welcome to Investor Resources with your hosts, Don Creech and Perry Sykes, who both realize that the market doesn't know what keeps you up at night. It doesn't know when you want to retire, and it doesn't know how old you are. The simple truth is, the market doesn't care. But if you care, then you've tuned in at the perfect time. You're listening to Investor Resources, bringing clarity to the confusing world of finance. Here are your hosts of Investor Resources, Don Creech and Perry Sykes.
Well, good afternoon. This is Don Creech.
And this is Perry Sykes. Welcome to the show, everyone.
So you are listening to the Investor Resources live radio program, which means you can call in and talk to us, ask a question. We'll be glad to discuss it with you if it has something to do with your portfolio or a hot stock tip recommendation from, well, let's say from a reliable source, which probably isn't your teenage kid who's been on YouTube and saw how much money people claim they made trading GameStop or AMC. You know, let's talk about something serious because most people in that lost money. The pros made a ton, but the inexperienced, not so much. Anyway, you want to call and talk to us. It is 800-465-8770, 800-465-8770. And we wrapped up our February stock market update this morning. And if you want to, if you missed it, didn't know about it, then you can go to our website, and Perry, you told me it's readily available. Is that right?
It's live. It's ready to go. You bet.
No, so all you have to do is go to the website, which is IRIradio.com. IRIradio.com is a shortcut to get to our company site. And you go to the video tab, and it'll be right there. It's also an opportunity to register for next month's webinar, which is not in the can.
not even close.
No. In fact, the one we did today got finished up this morning.
Indeed it did. And that's how you know it's brand new and it's very current.
Anyway, one of the questions that is on people's minds in today's market is just exactly what does the stock market do when the Federal Reserve hikes interest rates,
which does seem to be in the cards. It looks like they're actually going to do it this time. So what does the market do when rates start to increase?
Well, there is a point of reference that may shed some light on it, because since 1970, now that's a few decades back, which we don't use for building portfolios. But if you want to take a look at it from how did the Fed's actions change investor behavior in the following months or year or so? So we've gone back and taken a look here. Since 1970, the Fed funds rate has increased about 100 times. And that's more than roughly the 85 times that they lowered interest rates. So we could say that's pretty close to a wash. You know, why worry about
it? Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Alfred E. Newman. What? Me worry? Yeah. But most people do seem to worry about it. They're paying attention to the market. But inflation was pushing 7%, and it would not go away back in the 70s. And Paul Volcker was then leading the Federal Reserve. And he changed monetary policy and what the Fed was going to do. And that was basically, we're going to start managing interest rates instead of ignoring them. And they were managing monetary supply before that. So now they're managing rates. And he just pushed rates up and up and up. I think they hit 20%. I remember a client calling me who was buying a house. And he said, I've been approved for this loan. The interest rate on the 30-year mortgage was 21.5%. And he said, should I do this? And I said, well, one, at that time, the tax rates were higher, so there was a big tax, there was a 45% tax deduction. But I said, listen, you've qualified for it. You've got the income. More importantly, you have the need. Your family's growing. You need the space. So, I mean, have at it. And so you went out and bought the house. But how about that? 21.5% long 30-year mortgage.
Could you imagine someone going in today to their mortgage lender and seeing rates of 21%? They'd be looking for the camera, right? I'm a candy camera, right? This can't be real, right?
Or they'd be running to the bathroom really
fast. They're freaking out because rates have gone from 2.9 to 3.4. It's like, now what do we do? We're doomed. It's like, I don't think so. I'm not sure it's that bad. So
we turn around and take a look at these rates. Rates vary. I mean, part of it is the market is driving rates around based on demand. And the other part is the Fed is trying to have some impact on the economy. And was this, you had a chart on this in the first part of the webinar, didn't you?
On mortgage rates? I don't think so.
Oh, Fed funds rate.
Yeah, Fed funds rate, yeah.
The Fed fund rate, right. Anyway, basically, trying to figure out how to stop inflation as the market's trying to figure out what to do with the Fed. And so in 73, 74, we had a bear market, almost 50% drawdown. Yep. That does make people pay attention. Now, they're in that environment. Tax laws were a lot different than they are today. And a lot of people just abandoned the market and said, I'm going to go buy real estate. I'm going to go drill oil. I'm going to buy gold and diamonds. I'm going to buy container trucks. I mean, refrigerated trucks.
Anything that's not traded on the New York Stock Exchange. And there were people that thought Paul Volcker had just lost his mind. You know, this is crazy. We've got to stop this. And he was correct. You know, you've got to do that when inflation was running rampant as it was in the 70s.
So it took almost half a decade.
Yep.
I mean, the market continued to go back. It rallied, and then it would fall, and it rallied. And it didn't finally hit its apex until 1981. And then we had a bear market that dropped 27, almost 30%, that extended into 1982. And by then, President Reagan was elected, and he got the Democrats to lower taxes, and he began systematically unwinding bureaucratic roadblocks in the way of every kind of business, deregulation, and businesses began to thrive. And so we started a new bull market. Is that going to happen right now? We don't know. I mean, actually, this is a new world, because at this time, we are now dealing with something that has never happened before. If you want to talk to us, I mean, the number is 800-465-8770, 800-465-8770. But what is brand new with this market, and why, looking back over the last 80 or 90 years to build a portfolio, from our perspective, doesn't make a lot of sense, is because in those 80 or 90 years, you never had 100% of the central bankers around the world stimulating their economies, and all of the governments telling people not to work, shutting down plants, stay at home, we'll give you money. Now, it's really curious. I don't know what the answer is to this, but the governments told people, you stay home, you can't work, so we will give you money. Now, where did they get it if they didn't print it? They borrowed money. Some people had cash. I mean, the stock market's in the tank, at least for a few months it was. So maybe some of that money came out of the market, and they're buying bonds from the government at, darn near zero rates.
It's possible, though. It's possible, yeah.
And the rest of it had to do what? Had to come from where? Monetary expansion. The Fed, I think I mentioned this last week, Paul Volcker was interviewed on CNN. And they said, so where did you get this money? And he said, we printed it. And the interviewer said, you did what? You printed the money? You're the Fed. You're not the Treasury. And he said, yeah, you know, it's digital. We just make it up. We just print it.
It's only a keyboard away. You can just add that money right into the system, and off it goes.
And so you're surprised we have inflation. Well, no, I'm not surprised, because we printed the money. Well, he didn't. That's not, I'm making it part of the conversation. Yeah, but they act like, where'd this come from? What are we going to do about it? Well, it's transitory. It'll go away. It's transitory. It's transitory. Maybe not. Maybe we are going to have to do something about it.
And the truth is, they don't know. That's the part that's a little disturbing. Is, you know, the Fed, for as often as they've been running monetary policy and making policy changes, they've never been in this position. They have never had zero interest rates for year after year after year. They've never put as much money in the economy as they have recently. And now they're in the business of trying to get the rates under control, trying to sop up all that excess liquidity, and they're not sure how to go about it. So their only solution is, well, we're going to go slow and then see what happens. And that's really what they're doing. They're just feeling their way along here. And, you know, what happens is definitely to be determined, because they don't really have a clue as to how this story ends.
And Ben Bernanke, when he was chairman, he told Congress just that.
Back then, yeah.
We've never done this before. We don't know how it'll play out. And we don't know how it's going to end, but we'll figure it out when we get there. And then he's not chairman of the Fed. He passes the torch of how to figure it out on to Janet Yellen and now to Mr. Powell. So still nobody has an answer to this. However, some central banks around the world do, and they're saying, not on my watch. So the central bank in Brazil this last week raised interest rates by 1.5% in a single day to a total of 10.75% because inflation's running above 9% and they're going to put a stop to it. A few weeks back, Russia's inflation rate was above 5% and they went from 0% to almost 6% overnight. Mr. Putin said, not on my watch. We're going to kill this inflation thing because it's not good for society. And frankly, it's not good for staying in power if that's your game. And I think it is over there.
Of course, the downside is over there. If you're the guy that actually raises rates and it doesn't work, you're going to be off everybody's Christmas list there. So it's going to have a really tough year. So the stakes are high. Yeah.
Yeah. You may not even be seeing Christmas.
Wait, so. I'm telling you. We ought to go ahead and get a break here, Don, before we continue. We will continue on with our conversation about the Fed and the effects that it does have on the economy and through that extension through on the markets after our break. But I'd like to remind everyone that we do have our next market update on the schedule. It's scheduled for Saturday, March 5th at 9 a.m. You can register for that by going to iriradio.com. That is iriradio.com. Just head to that webinar page and give the registration link a click, and you will be registered. And then next month, you just click that link, and you'll be live online with us, just like we were this morning. You'll be able to see the charts we're talking about, ask questions about what's going on, and it's some time well spent to get some clarity on the market and answer any questions you have, questions that you have about the market or about individual securities. It's a great time to get a second opinion. Again, you can register for that at iriradio.com. If you'd like to talk to us here this afternoon, we'd be more than happy to speak with you. Give us a call at 800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. Stay with us. We will be right back.
You got to know when to hold up, know when to fold up, know when to walk away.
Yeah, it's tough to know when to walk away unless you have a process for it and you're paying attention to your process, following your rules, and checking on your predetermined schedule. And for those investors who were not doing that over the last 3 months, if they owned Facebook, well, you don't call it Facebook anymore.
Yeah, that's so last month. Yeah.
It is. You're right. It's now called Meta Platforms. And nobody knows what that means yet. I mean, inside the tech world. But if you own Facebook stock, Meta, tickers FB, Frank Baker, Facebook, anyway, it topped out in November. And this week you waked up and found out that you were down 33% in 3 months. Well, that's an official bear market for Facebook. And so the question is, can they turn that around when people are doing at Facebook what they are apparently doing at CNN and just running out the door. It's like somebody called fire, fire, and it's exit time. Now, for the boomers who are still using this to talk to their grandkids, that they're probably not going away. But there's a lot of competition coming up, which is part of the reason that it's now Meta Platforms to try and develop some additional capacity in new avenues. But I think that's going to be really hard to do since Zuckerberg is under congressional concern. He's got a lot of questions over
there. They want to talk, yes.
Yeah, they do want to talk. And that's going to make it difficult to go buy up his new competition. It's going to give them an avenue to open up some real business opportunity. Anyway, markets are self-correcting. That's one thing that does happen. They get down low enough, and there's finally enough buy the dippers who have saved some cash. And that's one thing that we touched on in today's webinar is that we have a decade of programming people to buy the dip, don't walk away, buy the dip. But it now looks like maybe it's sell the rally. But it will take some time, probably a year or two, for buy the dippers to get sufficiently discouraged.
Indeed.
To sell the rally.
We've seen and heard from significant money managers across the country who have said exactly that it's time to people are going to start selling the rally. And anytime you see a rally, it's time to, as they put it, to de-risk your portfolio as much as you can. So they're still looking for cover right now. Even though we've had a very short-term rally here after the drop in January, they're not buying this as a turnaround yet. In fact, for them, you're better off looking for a safer place to hang out than to look for a return to the growth of the previous year.
So one of the things that happens in this kind of market environment is, particularly on your financial media, you have strategists that come up on, they're being interviewed on TV and on the radio, and it's from some sort of big firm that manages a gazillion dollars of money, and say, well, what's your opinion here? Is this really buy the dip time, or is what should we be doing? So you get a comment that's kind of general, something like, well, the market could be down another 5 or 10%, but we remain constructively positive with regard to the market as long-term investors. So these sell-offs are good buying opportunities. We remain cautiously optimistic that this could be the bottoming process. But if it gets weaker, we would really be buyers. And you get through listening to that and you say, what did he just tell me?
Excuse me? Yeah, I need an interpreter, please.
So what's constructively optimistic about the market? See, the bottom line is I hear these things because I run Fox Business in my other monitor, my other computer, while I'm doing my work during the day. And I hear these guys and I'm saying, you didn't tell anybody anything that's actually going to help them. And basically what you're trying to do is keep people from selling and preserving capital while the market is in a high-risk position. But somebody needs to pay attention and make that decision. That's kind of why I play that Kenny Rogers song as a bump music. You got to know when to take your money off the table. You got to know when to hold them. You got to know when to fold them. And that is something that most people do not do. Now, you talk to professional managers and their accounts. They do that. You look at the guys who have quit the Fed because of their insider trading problem. Yeah. They were doing that. They weren't buy and hold long-term investors. They were actively trading their account to protect their portfolio. And yet you and I, the peons in the market, are told that in the long run, it always goes up. The problem is you don't know how long you have to run.
You don't at all. And that is the message from You know, over 90% of the financial advisors in the United States, they use modern portfolio theory. They hand you that pie chart. And what that means is that you're just going to ride out whatever comes along. So if everything is really losing money significantly, as we have gone through recently, we're going to make no changes. We're going to do the same thing. Like you said, Don, even if in their own accounts, they're going to do something wildly different for you. You're just going to sit there and take it because it's the easiest thing for them to do. It's the easiest way to explain to you that, well, you should just stay where you are. And if you try to move, then it's going to really get bad. You need to just leave it alone. So the message is leave your money with us and stop thinking about it. And that's their entire pitch.
So when we came into this last half of last month, earnings season started over again, and the financial companies, which financials means the big banks, JP Morgan, Citibank, USB, Deutsche Bank. I mean, these are investment banks. It's not your local credit union that they're talking about. So with these investment banks, they made tons of money over the last couple of years. Tons. Billions of dollars. In fact, they made so much money that they are paying out record sets of record amounts of cash bonuses to the people who gets it? The people on the trading desk. Yeah, the guys who are making money for the firms who are telling us you should be buy and hold because the market always goes up, they're making most of their money by buying and selling every day. And you get a three-day weekend, and you know how much they have in the market over a three-day weekend?
Yeah.
Not very much.
Zippo,
they close out a lot of positions. So you see a three-day weekend coming up, and you watch what happens on Friday trading. You'll see a lot of selling. There may be a little rally at the end where they don't want it to look too bad, so they'll put some stuff in, and they'll basically manipulate some prices for an hour or two.
But not in your account. You know, that's right. That's in the house account. Your account's just going to sit there as they're bailing out to safety, and they're not going to be concerned with what you do because they have a whole fleet of people whose job it is to call you and do enough handholding to keep you on board. But that's all they're really doing.
And it's not just the stuff that you get. It's the stuff that comes through our email also. I mean, there's a ETF strategist or ETF funds. It's an email that comes through on a regular basis, ETFtrends.com. So it's a financial services email. And they're always telling you about some sort of new exchange-traded fund or a new discipline or a new manager portfolio and stuff. And so in this market has been falling, one of the hot tips that has come through there is interest rates by being in your brokerage account or in the bank are zero. And so you want your client, because these are addressed to financial advisors, financial planners, you want your client to actually earn some interest. You can get almost 1% by buying our ultra short bond ETF from T. Rowe Price. Well, you could theoretically, but since it's been out on an annualized basis, it hasn't been out a full year yet, but on an annualized basis, instead of earning nearly 8%, you're going to lose 2 at the current rate. So it is, you should do this because this will keep your clients happy. You can tell them they're going to earn almost 1%, which is a lot better than what they're getting anyplace else. That'll help you, a financial planner, gather the money. It's in a safe place as we go around and lose nearly 2% over the course of a year.
That's why it's so important. Yeah, watch what people do, not what they say, because what they say may sound really great. They'll have a great narrative for what's going on, but in reality, nothing like that is actually happening, and that's what's important. So it's stay on top of what's going on in your portfolio. Because there's a very good chance that your broker is not doing that.
So one of the other things that's a funny sign is that if you're watching TV and they're talking about a bad day in the market, there will be pictures of the New York Stock Exchange floor or or some other trading floor, and all these people running around pulling their hair out of their head and they're throwing stuff in the air. The real question, are they hiring actors to do this? Because the trades are digital.
Yeah, or those pictures are all from, 1980, because it's not going on right now. But the pictures are great, aren't they?
Well, they are. We also, along with our monthly webinars, we also do a weekly email. And if you do not get that, you should send us an email at help@iriradio.com. Put review in the subject line, and we need your first and last name to set you up in constant contact, and you'll get that. If you don't like it, it's really easy to unsubscribe. So it's a one-click unsubscribe. But rarely does anybody do that.
They don't. People find it valuable, and like I said, Don, that unsubscribe button does work. It will take you out, but not many people stop reading. It's a good piece, and it can. That's another thing that can add some clarity. We're big on clarity. When you're trying to figure out what to do, you have to be able to have clear information about what direction to go in, and then you have a chance at least to make a good decision. We are at the bottom of the hour. Time to get out of here for another break. I'd like to remind everyone that we do have our next market update on the schedule. It's on the calendar for a Saturday, March 5th, 9 o'clock in the morning. You can register for that by going to iriradio.com. If you'd like to talk to us here this afternoon, we'd be more than happy to answer questions about the economy or the markets. Give us a call at 800-465-8770. That is 800-465-8770. You are listening to Investor Resources here on AM 770 KTTH. Stay with us. We will be right back.
The Lone Ranger.
Well, this market needs somebody riding into the rescue.
That's about time, right? Yeah. Now'd be good. Yeah.
So one of the things that happens when the market is selling off is human behavior changes. And you mentioned that, Perry, in today's webinar. And
sure.
That when the market's going up, everybody sooner or later becomes aggressive.
Correct.
They have not been making enough money, and it's about time that they became less conservative. So ramp up my risk profile. And that usually happens pretty close to the top of a market before a major correction sets in. And as that correction gets deeper, steeper, and the losses get bigger, man, I never should have been that aggressive. I think in real life, I really am a conservative investor. So let's just take the losses and get out of here and be more realistic. You and I have both seen that happen in real life.
Many times. It's very common for that to happen to investors. And they don't even know what's happening until you actually sit down and talk to them about what it is they're feeling and how they're looking at the market. And they do become incredibly aggressive on the way up and incredibly conservative on the way down.
And we're not neuroscientists.
No, we are not.
It's easy to see that people actually act differently when they're losing money than they do when they're making it.
Yeah.
When they're making it, you got a smile on your face. You won't know what happened. Guess what I did today in the market? When it's going down, I don't want to talk to you. I don't want to talk to you. But I will talk to Kent. He's on the line. Kent from
Hello?
Kent. You're on the line with Don and Perry. Go ahead, sir.
Yes. My question has to do with when your analytics tell you that we are certainly in a bear market, I understand that perhaps the best thing to do is to move some or all of the money into cash out of equities, but have you ever considered, or what are your thoughts about inverse ETFs or funds? For example, like the RIDEX family, as I recall, they had some of those that bet in a bear market. What about those? Would you ever include any of those in your portfolios at the appropriate time?
Well, we do. The dynamic portfolio does incorporate exposure to inverse exchange-traded funds. And we don't use the inverse mutual funds because we don't use mutual funds. We can't put, particularly with inverse, the volatility is higher, the expenses are higher, just because of the operation of the derivatives that they have in them. So you have to be willing to offset, you need to offset the higher fees and deal with higher volatility. So we never take a position in inverse funds and assume we're going to be able to sit on it. They are very high risk from a buy and hold, even a short-term buy and hold like weeks. I mean, sometimes that can happen, but that's usually you get a rally somewhere. If you're in a bear market that's going to last for months to years, you're going to get rallies, which if you are using an inverse fund, depending upon your entry, can wipe out your gain and cost you money. And you have to have a good gut to be able to handle large, fast losses if you're committed to a bear market strategy. Now, and those funds, we've used them, but I think probably as long as we've ever held them has been a couple of weeks. And then you get a rally and we come out of them. And if it continues down, you can re-enter. But one of the principles of money management is don't lose money. I mean, you're always going to have environments where you're underwater on a particular trade, or you're underwater in your portfolio on a brief period of time as you try to hedge it, because nothing goes straight up all the time. But when it starts going against you, do you have rules about how much you're willing to lose and then exit? Because your assumptions could be wrong. Now, if the market continues trending down, you can buy it back. But we do believe inverse funds have a legitimate use, but because they are a high volatile asset, they in our operation, they only belong in one portfolio, which is the dynamic portfolio. The others don't trade fast enough to be able to handle the volatility risk associated with them. So, yeah, I mean,
dynamic portfolio, you could get out of that in the day, for example, out of
that's correct. In the dynamic portfolio, the minimum holding period on any position, the required minimum holding position period is one trading day. We can't sell it the same day we buy it. We have to wait until the next day, and then we can place an order.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So anyway, that's a good question, Kent. Thanks for being out there. We've got another caller on the line. I'm going to switch over to him while we have time here. So this is Roger from Ballard. Roger, you're on the line with Don and Perry.
Yeah, gentlemen. Yeah, a couple questions here. Do you guys believe in more active funds or passive funds?
Well, we use both. You know, it's a function of what's working. So passive funds have a legitimate role, and if they are generating better returns, you should own them. If you have an active alternative, even though it may have a higher expense ratio, if it's providing a better result, you should own it. We don't have an opinion that says passive is the only way to go because they're cheap internal expense ratio. Some people believe
Go ahead.
Well, I mean, some people believe that the expense ratio is the only criteria. I mean, we run a portfolio, the select portfolio. We run it on Schwab's ETFs because their internal fees are so cheap. I don't know anybody who's less expensive. And we run it on a flat 1% fee for people who are fee sensitive and believe it doesn't matter. If I could get a better return, I'm not going to pay for it. So that's a philosophical opinion.
Go ahead. My next question on ETFs. I know you guys get mostly ETFs. Is there any one time you buy something that's not an ETF?
No. Our portfolios are all ETFs. The only exception would be in the 401k accounts that we manage. We do provide some funds in there because they're not available in ETF format.
ETFs are just so much easier to trade than mutual funds that the mutual funds just aren't worth the headache.
Is it too late in the period now to get into value funds, REITs, and oil and gas? Do you think that time has passed and they've gone up too much that you person right now shouldn't get in any of those three type funds?
Well, we don't own REITs in our current portfolios. REITs are really, from an investment standpoint, are more of a bond alternative. Get better dividend payout than you would on interest rate on bonds, and have the ability for those underlying assets to raise rents and eventually raise the dividend payout. But in the current market, it's not doing well enough to be in our portfolio, in any of our portfolios. What we do own is exposure to energy and financials and emerging markets, because in our ranking process, they have continued to qualify. Now, we do have, correct me, Perry, but I think the global portfolio has exposure to value through dividend fund. Is that correct?
Correct. We have an S&P 500 high dividend fund. Correct.
Yeah, so that's a value play. And no, I don't think it's too late to be there. And I don't think it's too late to be in energy. In the dynamic portfolio, it has a 40% exposure to energy. When you're looking at the current energy situation globally, and I have to remember that oil is fungible, which means anywhere in the world, the things that impact it and its use are going to change the price of it. So you have an economy, global economy, that is expected to expand over last year. You have geopolitical risks that are in play with Russia. You have our administration, which closed down our superiority in oil production globally and made us energy dependent again on OPEC and Russia. So energy prices have been rising, and they traded above $90 this last week, $90 a barrel on the Brent market. And they're getting close to that on West Texas Intermediate, which is a better quality oil. The administration approved the use of Nord 2 natural gas pipeline to supply natural gas to Europe. So, and Germany and France are shutting down their nuclear energy plants, making themselves more dependent on natural gas and carbon-based fuels. Sweden and Denmark, the ones that have spent tons of money on wind power and solar power, the wind's not blowing. They are not generating power. And when the things ice up, they don't spin. So nobody ever thought of that. You need to put de-icing equipment on your windmills out in the middle of the ocean. I mean, there's a lot of pressure on oil. So the forecast for oil now has moved from $100 a barrel to $150 a barrel. Now, will it get there in a year and a half? I don't know. But that trend is strong. So you may be a little late off the bottom here, but I don't think that oil is topping out. So we have good exposure to that.
One last question real quickly. If Putin goes into Ukraine, do you think the market's going to go down the tube, or is that already built in?
That's probably already factored into current market prices.
It'll probably have a quick reaction if it happens.
Term.
Sure, but it's not likely to be lasting. Depending on where that goes, of course, that you want to talk about a gray area. No one knows where that would turn end up. Of course, so it would probably immediately have a short term reaction, but probably not long term unless it really got ugly.
All right, gentlemen, thank you.
Thank you, Roger.
So that raises an interesting question in terms of energy usage, because the move to green energy is gaining ground, and it's gaining ground from the top down now with major institutional money managers, Diamond at JP Morgan, BlackRock. I mean, they're going to the companies in which they have massive shareholding positions because they're managing money for mutual funds and ETFs. And they're going to these companies and saying, we want to know what your green energy plan is. How are you going to get out of the carbon consuming business? And if you don't have a good plan and we don't like it, we're going to dump your stock. There's not a CEO that wants to have his stock dumped by BlackRock or JP Morgan because that's where his bonus money is. The entire executive office branch of people, their compensation is tied to stock performance.
So really the primary thing to watch is the stock price. That's the key. Instead of trying to divine through watching anything the rest has to do with traditional oil or green energy and who's going to win and who's going to lose, watch the prices of the things that you're interested in and see how they move compared to what else you could own. And that'll tell you the truth about whether or not it's worthwhile entering or not. And you don't have to worry about, well, people say I've missed the move and it's too old. It doesn't matter what people say. What are the prices doing? And if the prices are going up, buy them. And if the prices are going down, don't. And you don't have to get any more complicated than that. It really is that simple.
Own leadership and sell laggards.
It will keep you out of trouble and it will keep you in the strength of the market. It's a good policy. It's a big part of what we do, and you can do the same thing. But you have to track prices and not listen to the talking heads tell you it's too early or it's too late. Just watch the prices. That'll tell you the truth about what's going on. And what else is going on right here is we're late for break, as usual. So we'll go ahead and get out of here. I'd like to remind everyone that you can register for our next stock market update, Saturday, March 5th, 9 o'clock in the morning. You can register for that by going to iriradio.com. That's iriradio.com. You can register right there on the webinar page. We have plenty of time to talk to you this afternoon. Give us a call, 800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. Stay with us. We will be right back.
Mama said there'll be days like this, there'll be days like this, Mama said.
Mama said, Mama said.
Mama said there'll be days like this, there'll be days like this. Mama,
well, when you're in the market, you're going to have one of those.
Or more, yeah.
Or more. That's right. And it kind of reminds me of a point I made in today's webinar about Friday's market. Friday started off as it looked like it was not going to be pretty, and then it ended up green. Mm-hmm. And so you're sitting there saying, well, that was, boy, I sure feel a lot better about that. Then I go back and I look at my stock scans that I do every day. And as far as the stocks are concerned, the ones that are in uptrends, they've been moving up, they're green. The ones that have been moving down, a lot of them finished in the green also by the dippers.
Had a good day, yeah, good day.
At the end of the day, but they're still in downtrends. So even though you look at I showed my monitor, it's all green. It's green across the board. But then you do the count. Well, the number of stocks that are in downtrends are three times greater than the number that are in uptrends. So you had a green day because some buy the dippers came in at the tail end and changed the color of the screen, but the day finished lower.
That kind of a move isn't even close to enough to change the trend. The trend is still negative right now, and those big green days, like you said, Don, that's a buy the dippers are coming in, but one day, not going to change the trend.
Well, they're going to become, it'll take a while, but they will become sell the rallies.
There you go.
But, you know, on the break, I was thinking about this conversation with Roger on energy. One of the things that the people who are pushing the green conversion seem to have forgotten, even China has been closing down coal plants for more than a year. I mean, we talked about it more than a year ago as they started to do this. And recently they are closing down steel mills. When you're saying, so that's going to clean up the environment. Yes. But you want to build windmills, right? Guess what you need? You need steel.
Oops.
You want steel? Guess what you need? You need coal. If you don't have coal, you don't have steel. You aren't going to get your windmills. Guess what electric vehicles need? they need more steel than they do aluminum because the batteries are so heavy, they have to have steel frames again. So
I just saw that online. There was a picture of about I swear it looked like a mile long coal train. And they said, oh, look, another train load of electric vehicle fuel. So you need to remember that's what's going on.
So this whole transition to green can happen, but it has to happen over two or three or more decades. You can't make it happen today without continuing to raise the cost of standard energy.
It's a big switch. And it's going to take time.
And to turn around and tell neighborhood developers that we're not going to let you have natural gas. No, now, natural gas is too clean a fuel. Now, maybe around here, because we have hydroelectric, it's not that big a deal. But you get away from the hydroelectric plants, which the greenies would just as soon demolish. Natural gas is really a cheap, clean-burning fuel that runs factories. It runs utilities. And you want to tell the utilities that they can't have it to make electricity. This is not well thought out. So with regard to Paul's question, will energy go higher? Part of this has to be your time frame. Now, in ours, a portfolio, we have a high daily accountability, short-term accountability from clients. You as an individual can take a longer-term view of the market, but consider these other things. And if you can tolerate some intermittent drawdowns, which are going to occur, putting it in your portfolio clearly has some rationality to it.
It does. As long as you're tracking the prices and not the narrative, because the story can be great. The timing of the story can be completely wrong. So you have to make sure you're not throwing good money after bad if something's continually to lose money.
So one of the things you want to be careful that you're not doing is you don't sabotage your own portfolio.
Always a good thing, yes.
And the word loss or actual real losses, you watch your portfolio value go down, especially if you just retired and all of a sudden you're down 5 or 10% and you're thinking it was a bad decision. But 5-10% fluctuation of portfolio is pretty normal. I've had people have with this discussion and say, if you can't handle that, go to the bank. Well, they don't pay any money. Yeah, but you won't be down 5%.
Ever. So, yeah.
Never. Yeah.
or up 5% ever. So
you just have to figure it out. So how do you avoid sabotaging yourself? And that is you have to learn yourself. You have to learn who you are with regard to volatility, and you have to learn from your mistakes. You are going to make mistakes.
What do you do
with them?
Yep. Everyone's got to learn from them. And the best way, the most productive thing you can do is check your ego at the door. If you make a great trade and it's turning out well, don't take that as a personal victory. Just take that, hey, the process worked, that was a good decision. Same thing's true of a big loss. You take a big loss, it's not because you're dumb. It's not because it was a stupid decision. It's because it didn't work this time. So get your ego out of the way and don't take it personally. That will really skew the way you look at things.
So if you're trying to manage your own portfolio or you just want to understand it better, how to survive through the volatility, there's a book you might pick up called What I Learned Losing $1 Million. So presumably, you don't want to lose $1 million.
There's a long line for the I don't want to lose $1 million. Yes.
Right. And you may not have that much to lose right now, but the issue is how do I manage the psychology of myself when I go through these periods, what happens? And success can be built upon repeated failures when the failures aren't taken personally. And that's what you just mentioned, Perry.
You bet.
It's the ego issue. Man, I really screwed up. And you can beat yourself up with that. You don't. You go back and look at your log. How did I make that trade? Why did I make that decision to buy that dumb thing that cost me to lose money?
And you know, we do that all the time. We go back and we look at the trades over and over again. And when we do, we can go back and point out, you know what? This was not a bad decision. The decision was correct. That's exactly what we should have been buying. It just didn't work out because, as we say at the beginning of the show, the markets don't care what you just bought. And if everything goes south right after you buy it, it's not personal. It's just one of those things that happens.
So we want to learn from each trade. And so we log them into files and say, so when I place a trade, I have my charts and my rationale is written down in a Word file. And then my trade is documented. We trade at Charles Schwab. So I document the screens. This is the price. This is what the spread was. This is what I think I'm doing. This is why I'm buying it. This is what the technical factors are that would justify this decision. Buy or turn around and sell. It's the same thing, just in reverse. Whether it worked or not, you go back and you look at what you did and how you made the decision. What was that decision based on? Was it based on, well, I heard a guy on Fox Business say this is a great buying opportunity for, well, that's not a decision-making process. That's a bet. You know, that's like going to Vegas.
Correct. You've got no data. You're listening to the story. Hey, that sounds good. I'm going to go do it. There's no information behind that decision. So that's just winging it. And that could be dangerous.
Certainly. So we have lots more that will unfold in the coming month. And as that unfolds, we'll be making notes so that when we get to March 5th, we're going to be doing another stock market update webinar. And you can register for that at iriradio.com. But while we had Kent and Roger call in today, maybe you want to talk to us during the week because you're a little radio shy. Somebody might recognize your voice and say, what are you doing on the radio? You don't want that to happen. You call us during the week. The number to do that is 800-317-9119. 800-317-9119. You can also send us an email during the week, help@iriradio.com. That's help@iriradio.com. If you don't get our week in review, send us an email, same email address, help@iriradio.com. Put review in the subject line. We need your first and last name in the body of the email so we can set you up in constant contact. And if for some reason you think it's not worthwhile, it's an easy one-click unsubscribe. We have 900 or so subscribers to that, and very rarely do we see anybody unsubscribe. Constantly new information, just like our webinars are constantly revised and new. We're out of time. God bless you, your family, and God bless the United States of America. Have a great weekend.